Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast with Mike Van Pelt, the comeback coach, helping you gain peace, clarity, and understanding in your walk with God as a man, a father, and a spouse. Hey, get involved with the show. Send your email to mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. If you're wondering what's gone adrift in my masculine soul and asking, is there more to life? This is where it begins. This is the True Man Podcast. Welcome to the True Man Podcast. This is an invitation to radical reconstruction of a man's masculine heart and soul and a place of safe community where we dare to ask questions deep-seated inside a man and explore ways to help you become a better man, a better son, a better dad, and a better spouse. Well, thank you for joining me today, and I hope your 2024 is off to an exceptional start. Now, on today's episode, I'm going to speak with Dr. Ed Slover about mindset and peak performance on the way to understanding the quest for success. I think that's a great way to start the year. Now, remember, success is a personal and evolving pursuit, and there's no one-size-fits-all formula. So it's important to embrace the challenges that come your way and learn from the setbacks. And celebrate, of course, the victories that occur, no matter how small they are. Your journey is unique, and your definition of success is yours to define. And Dr. Ed and I are going to explore more about that on today's show. So let's get to that interview, and I'll follow up with more after our conversation. Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast. You know, as I researched this week's guest and podcast, my curiosity was piqued by the word quest. And you'll understand that better in a minute. And as I looked at it, quest refers to a profound and purposeful journey or mission that individuals and businesses embark upon to seek something of great significance. And I have to say, just reading that made me feel excited, and I can't wait to learn more from today's guest. So welcome to the True Man Podcast, Dr. Ed Slover. He is the president and founder of Quest Consulting Service and Quest for Life. He's the host of It's the Not My Credit to Take podcast, which is a great podcast. I had the privilege to be on a couple of weeks ago. So Ed, thanks so much for being on the True Man Podcast. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you, Mike. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Ed, you know, such an easy word to fall in love with, this whole idea of quest. Maybe talk about that a little bit and where that comes from and why that is a part of you. How does that word quest come about?
A pull from God. One of the things that I thought about over the years working in higher education, I just finished an 8-year stint as an associate professor of management and marketing at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix. I always thought about being a consultant, if for no other reason. It's really easy to become insulated in higher education. And with so much activity, so many changes going on in business and industry, my thought was, well, I'll become a consultant because I need to stay relevant for my students.
Yeah.
Mike, nothing ever came of it. I would have those thoughts and ideas, and then they would vanish. But in August of 2021, I walked into my living room and my wife was sitting there and I'm like, darling, I'm feeling a tug. And she gets excited whenever I say tug or pull or nudge, because she knows Holy Spirit is directing this. And then she's like, well, what is it? It's time to start a consulting business. It's like, okay. And so we kind of brainstormed a little bit. And the first thing I wanted to figure out was the name. She and I literally went through every letter of the alphabet and brainstormed different names. And we get to Q. And right when we came across Quest, we knew exactly that's what that was. And it's interesting, if you look at the logo, it has a massive Q in the center of it. And then it has a tilted square around the Q. And on the right side of that, it's unfinished. And that really appealed to me because we're all unfinished. The journey is unfinished until we leave this life. And so that's where Quest came from. Truly believe that it was inspired by God.
You know, that's funny. A lot of people would not know this. It's not a story I refer back to. Several years ago, before I started True Man Life, I went through this whole idea of consulting, did a little business consulting. And so I set up an LLC under it. So True Man really operates under that umbrella. And I'm hearing you tell that story and I'm thinking to myself, wow, I did the same doggone thing. And I just happened to be out in the mountains of Colorado when this whole idea of Ascent came into my mind. And so Ascent Leadership Resources is actually the LLC. It's the umbrella that all my businesses fit underneath. And it was kind of going through almost a similar thing that you did. Like, what is, and you know, I love the idea of ascent because it's really to rise and climb. And so there was, it was great. Thank you for that story. You brought me back. Talk about being unfinished a little bit. I think this is a good topic to land on because so many of us show up broken, hurt, wounded. We're looking for second chances, comebacks, pivot points, opportunities. What does unfinished look like to you?
Unfinished really speaks to this idea that when we achieve any goals in life or we close chapters of this book of life, that's the launching pad for the next thing. It's interesting because if you look at some of the really profound things that we accomplish in our life, such as graduating high school, college, getting married, having children, retirement, all of those are really landing spots. And the joy that we experience in those moments is quite fleeting if we're honest with ourselves. And so we have the first side of this unfinished, knowing that whatever we achieve serves as the jump off point for the next thing that isn't finished until it's finished. The other is this recognition that when we look back at the process, that's where we find the joy. And far too often, we're so outcomes focused, outcomes oriented, we lose sight of the learning experience and the joy that we can have along the way.
Well, I agree with that 100%. So talk about that, because I commonly say to people, yeah, it's important to be goal-oriented, but don't lose sight of the journey you're on. You'll miss something. You know, the journey is equally as important as staying entrenched in the goal. So talk about the importance of process that people, what's a good way to say this, that people need to stay focused on.
I like to break it up in really into two buckets. You have the outcome goals, which are self-evident, graduating high school, getting a promotion, whatever that is. That is really the North Star. Then you have process goals. Like, how are we going to go about reaching that North Star? And what are those timelines or stepping stones along the way that allow us to orient ourselves properly toward that outcome or the desired outcome? And in the midst of that, taking stock of how we're doing relative to our process, especially whenever we bump up against struggle and adversity, because very often the outcome goal is far off in the distance. If you have someone who wants to lose 100 pounds, that's an overwhelming mindset to have to deal with. But if we look at the process to say, hey, look, what can you do over the course of this next week or this next 2 weeks? It's almost a sprint mentality. Mm. And taking stock of how you did relative to what you set out to do. And what's interesting is, when we stay more present, and that's sort of cliche nowadays, but when we stay more present in the process and pressure certain aspects of the process, it's remarkable that when we achieve the desired outcome, how fast it seemed to occur versus just simply living in overwhelm or feeling frozen that the goal that we ultimately want to reach is out of reach.
Yeah, and that's what probably causes a lot of people to start. Now, you and I have just gotten to know each other over the last probably 3 or 4 weeks, so you wouldn't know this. Now, I have actually been, and would not call it a weight loss journey. I just have gone through a detox program, and believe it or not, over the last 3 weeks, I've lost 17 pounds.
Good for you.
Which is amazing. Now, I will say this. I did not set out to lose weight. There was a whole other reason why I was doing the program, which was health. Number one, I wanted to see if I could do it, right? I wanted to set a goal to go 21 days and see if I could go through this program. The side effect of that was losing weight. Now the feeling is, whoa, I feel pretty doggone good. Maybe this is a good place to be in. But within 21 days, I accomplished something. And not that I would consider myself to be a very goal-oriented person, but there was something, incredibly tangible that happened within that 21 days of learning, not just the weight loss. Is this what people are missing? That they can set a short-term goal like that and pick up a quick win and to help them catapult forward in life?
So much of it comes back to mindset. Whenever you think about it, your mindset was one where you wanted to see if you could do it.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the cascading effect that comes out of that. Clearly, you accomplished the 21 days, so you proved to yourself you can do it, but other evidence showed up along the way that proved highly beneficial, like losing 17 pounds. And now all of a sudden you feel better about yourself. You have more energy. Mm-hmm. And then you make different decisions by virtue of feeling better about yourself and having more energy. And it really feeds on itself. It's self-reinforcing in so many different ways. And now this can go the other way too, Mike, because if you took the next 21 days and said, you know what, I'm going to eat donuts, I'm going to be sloth-like, I'm just not going to do anything. Well, what do we expect is going to happen after that 21 days? So it's self-reinforcing either way. More specifically to your question, I'm all about racking up short-term wins in the pursuit of a longer-term goal. And sometimes what stifles us is we don't know exactly how that's going to show up. And so in that uncertainty, we freeze versus saying, you know what, maybe it's not quite my how. For example, with my consulting business, I didn't know where the clients were going to come from. I didn't know how this was going to be, but I grounded in the idea that God was pulling me in that direction for a different reason, different purpose, and it's not my how. And I have to trust that, you know, it's going to show up. Otherwise, he would just be cruel. And neither you nor I believe that we have a heavenly father that doles out cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, definitely not. And I feel the same way that you did. And I guess I kind of have a similar story in my faith journey and doing what I'm doing. But talk about that a little bit, because my experience in talking with people is, you know, yes, they have hope for a greater tomorrow, but that faith to do something like you're doing and go, gosh, I'm feeling that tug. Here's the direction we're going. Help people with that, that are struggling with, I think that's God's voice pulling me this direction, but I'm not exactly sure.
Mike, it's a frightening place.
It is.
It's a frightening place. Let me give you a little bit of backstory. I didn't grow up in Christian home. I didn't grow up in the church. My mom always had a relationship with Jesus. I knew my dad grew up Catholic. That was the extent of my exposure to God outside of going to a couple of Sunday schools with friends and attending church when I was a teenager. My dad died when I was 13. He was 39 years old. He passed away of pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And as you might expect, I was an angry young man through most of my young adulthood. And how I coped with that was reading as much material as I could get my hands on, particularly philosophy. Of all things, philosophy. I was literally the guy at the gym on the recumbent bike reading William James's Variety of Religious Experience.
I suppose there's always one.
There's always one. I was that nerd. Well, that's how I coped. But when you put an angry young man with esoteric types of concepts and you marry those two, and so you have an expanding intellect in addition to anger, Mike, I alienated a ton of people.
Yeah.
A ton of people. I had no qualms with tearing strips off of people if they dissatisfied me. And it wasn't until I had a conversation with one of my sisters and asked her, why don't we have a relationship anymore? And she looked at me and she said, because you're a jerk.
Mm.
And it was a light bulb moment. It was that she pulled that out of my blind spot, and it was exactly what I needed to hear. Well, over the years, I ended up backing off the whole alienation bit, but I ended up softening my heart because I just had more conversations with Jesus. I wasn't a churchgoer. I just had more conversations with Jesus. And over the years, particularly the last few years, I'm really conscious of engaging in practices where I can hear his whisper and along with a variety of tugs. And just for the audience sake, I engage in regular meditative practice once or twice a day, in addition to prayer, in addition to putting down the distractions. We all know that we live in a world that is chock full of things that divert our attention away from the things that matter most.
Yeah.
And yet we still engage in them. And that's not an indictment of anyone, because I'm guilty of that too. But I think when we're able to get quiet for however long per day we're able to do that, sit in quiet self-reflection, whether it's meditation, prayer, whatever, we're able to hear God's whisper and discern that, hey, this is what's happening. And in that space, it can give us a little bit more confidence to move forward when we know that we're kind of stepping into the void of it not being our how. It doesn't mean it's not frightening. But I'm not sure the goal is to be less afraid. I think the goal is to be more courageous.
Oh, amen. Yeah, I don't think that you can run from fear. I think when you go in search of your heart and the role that God plays in it, there's some scary things going on. And, you know, it's interesting because hearing you talk about hearing the whispers and being in the quiet and having those still moments, you know, I go to a lot of men's events. And I know I was this guy at one point where I was like, man, I don't think I've ever heard God's voice. I don't know what that sounds like. I don't know what you're talking about. Is that a real thing? I mean, you know, I was a Christian, but I'm like, I'm not hearing it. And I've heard a lot of other guys say the same thing. So talk about the importance of being still. Now, I'm a firm believer. I've since, you know, heard God's voice, and I recognize it all around me in many different ways. But talk about that a little bit, how being able to be still, slow down, and be quiet is a great way to get in touch with our Heavenly Father.
I want to tell you a story to answer your question.
I love it. Yeah.
Because I believe that God speaks to us in different ways. I remember hearing years ago that God speaks to us in a way we can hear and understand. Mm. Sometimes it's a feeling, Sometimes it's a knowing. Sometimes it's audible for some people. Sometimes it's a download, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And I'm in the midst of what can only be described as a spiritual awakening. And I think in large part, that's been due to consistent meditative practice. Rather than viewing God as being out there, I've taken a different approach that God is inside of us. And that makes sense to me, because what's the point of Holy Spirit if God isn't inside of us?
Yeah.
And he created us, so we're almost like a puzzle piece to him in many ways. But the story I wanted to share with you is that earlier this year, so at the time of this recording, this would have been February of 2023, my wife and I were sitting on the sofa. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I had my head leaned back with my eyes closed. And all of a sudden, it felt like I got a download. And it's not my credit to take. It's not my credit to take? What is that? And she looked at me and she's like, what are you talking about? Like, I have no idea. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but it's not my credit to take. And the next morning, I was praying. And one of the things I included my daily prayer for about a year now is, Lord, please put something in my physical world today that's so obvious or surprising, I can't help but notice it, that shows me I'm lined up with your call in my life.
I like that.
And I'm getting ready. So this is now Sunday morning, and I'm getting ready, and I can't get this it's not my credit to take thing out of my head. And that's a weird psychological space, because where does discernment stop and obsessing start?
Wow.
And then I'm like, okay, all right, I get it. And I handed my wife a pen and a legal pad. I'm like, I just need to talk. And five pages later of notes, we were able to review it. And it's led to, as you mentioned earlier, it's led to the It's Not My Credit to Take podcast, where I get to have conversations with Christ followers from all walks of life, figuring that the worst case scenario is that I'm going to learn a whole bunch of really cool stuff from a whole bunch of great people.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I would have been able to hear that if I didn't get quiet. Because one thing that you talk to anyone that engages in regular meditative practice, quiet self-reflection, contemplation, is that it stills the mind. And with that deliberate practice, you can get into that space really, really quickly, which is why I think when I had my head leaned back on the sofa and eyes closed, that came through. Because there wasn't any other noise. We were just being still. And so as a practical way to go about this, I think a starting point would say, hey, take 5 minutes a day in quiet self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Or 5 minutes a day in meditation, knowing that you're not going to be good at it. Yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And we don't like things that we're not good at. But I would encourage you to push into that and say, you know what, today it's going to be 5 minutes. Tomorrow it's going to be 5 minutes. Maybe next week you ratchet that up to seven. And you just start kind of work into that.
Yeah.
It's revelatory for anyone that is willing to take that step.
I agree. I'm trying to think. This was prior to COVID. John Eldridge, I don't know if you've read, and John Eldridge came out with, and it was for a book, and they had no intention of making it mainstream, but they came out with an app called the Pause app. And it was a prayer app. And on that app, they had 1, 3, 5, 15, 1, 3, 5, and 10. And I think they've since added a longer prayer app. And their thought was, and it, for me, I use it as a prayer meditation thing. But their thought when they created it was, who in their right mind is going to listen to 10 minutes, right? And so you have to work your way into it. So you start at 1 minute, and then you have to do so many of those, and then they open up the 3 minute and the 5 minute and then the 10. And so that was really when that came out, how I began. And I've since added some breathing things that I do. When that first came out, 5 minutes felt like forever. And I'm saying this for everybody listening, because I agree with you 100%. Now, I mean, 10, 15 minutes, you know, I could sit there for 30. And, you know, I think it's an awesome way to start my day. Now, you know, it's also a great way to, you know, if you've had a heavy, I had a heavy morning prior to this podcast. I have something I really need to think on when I'm done today. After we're done recording, I'm going to spend some time in prayer and meditation because I need it. And so I'm a big encourager of this. And I agree with you again. Just do it. I'm not even sure what failure looks like on it, quite honestly, Ed. I think that people would be shocked at how they can just really get in touch with their emotions and breathe. Is this something that you've made a part of your practice when you're consulting with people to get them to teach them maybe how to slow down and breathe and hit the pause button throughout the day?
We definitely discuss it and encourage it. One of the exercises that most people cannot stand that I take them through is...
Gotta be a good one then.
It couldn't be simpler. And yet it's crazy disruptive to people. And that is, we're going to sit still in this room and we're going to do exactly nothing for 3 minutes. And that 3 minutes to them feels interminably long, keeping in mind that how we're taught and is, it's all about doing and being, quote, productive.
Yeah.
And so many people are busy but not productive, but that may be for a different question. But this idea of, well, if I'm not being productive, then that influences my self-worth. And I want to feel good about myself. And so I can't have any downtime, because if I have that downtime, I like myself less. Well, that doesn't feel all that good. What's interesting, though, about taking those moments to get quiet and reflect provides clarity and perspective. Yeah. It also provides a source of rest, which then allows us to be more productive when we are performing our work. So in that context, I'm much more concerned about managing energy versus managing time. I figure I can perform 7 or 8 things excellently every day. And if I get to those 7 or 8 things every day, my day's effectively done. I don't need to continue layering on, especially knowing that energy is finite. And if I add anything else to the list, what's going to be the quality of whatever it is that I produce? I'd be much better served to push it to the next day and then engage in those behaviors that are restorative, like we've been talking about with meditation or reflection.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And I love talking about energy. I think energy is so important. I think that that, you know, lends itself well to enthusiasm in life and productivity and all these things. And part of the reason, again, I'm circling back to this whole detox weight loss thing that I went through, because it was so fast. It's just been such a fascinating process for me, because I'm a donut guy, man. Attacking that donut or that cookie, they stick to me like magnets, and I love sweet things. So, you know, I'm having to learn to go without. But what I'm realizing, particularly with my business and my career, that energy is so critical to it. And so critical in the direction that I want to go, that I was trying to figure out ways to have more energy. And what's interesting is that I'm getting everything out of this program and more than I thought was possible. So for example, not only did I get the weight loss, an interesting side note is, and I wasn't having problems sleeping, but I'm sleeping better, which is fascinating. And I don't think we can underestimate how important our sleep patterns are to our energy. And so this whole idea of energy and productivity is, I think, really, really important. Leads me to ask you, as somebody who's been in academia, maybe you've been in touch with this, have we gotten productivity wrong in corporate America? Have we confused it?
I think we've absolutely confused it with busyness. I mean, think about it this way, Mike. Most people that have a 40-hour work week don't come anywhere near working 40 hours.
No.
They're there 40 hours, but they're not productive for 40 hours. And how we know that is the first time you go to the restroom, you're no longer working 40 hours.
Right.
And then you start looking at other things, like how many times when we had corporate jobs were we involved in break room conversations, or someone popped their head in on Monday morning asking about the football game. You have all of that. What I'm not suggesting are those things are unimportant. I think the social collegial nature of working in an office space is quite important. But we also have set up a system where holding people accountable to time. We're also setting up a system where if we don't see people being busy, then we have to hold them accountable to help justify their salaries. And so you have employees that understand the rules of the game and understand that if their immediate supervisor is walking by, then they need to be able to show their busyness or productivity, when chances are pretty good what they're doing is non-essential. And for your listeners, I would even experiment with this. We've all been tasked with delivering certain reports to our immediate supervisor because we were told that those reports were important. What if we didn't send a certain report for a week? If for no other reason to assess whether or not someone would notice. And that really gets to this idea of essential, non-essential. Productivity are those essential things that move the needle. Busyness are those non-essential things that we could probably live without that really don't have much of an effect on anything. And I think we get that wrong. I think we blend those two to the point where sometimes it's really difficult to differentiate between essential, non-essential. But when we take an honest look and say, hey, look, your salary is justified by doing the essential things. You get those done and you happen to get them done in 32 hours a week, I'm going to pay you your wage. Because at some point, that 40 number becomes somewhat arbitrary.
Yeah. My suggestion is everybody become an entrepreneur for a few weeks. And doesn't that change things a little bit? Ed, has that been your experience? I mean, you know, the bottom line is if you don't do it, it's not getting done unless you're delegating something out, like, you know, maybe social media or podcast editing or whatever the heck it is. I mean, you know, at least for me, you know, I laugh at 40 hours, like one day seems to lead into the other, but I don't differentiate between really my business and personal life. They seem to just blend together because of what I do, which I'm fine with, by the way. But what's your experience as an entrepreneur? It's a little harder, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's where I think managing time can get us into trouble, because you know this as an entrepreneur as well as I do, that we think about it constantly.
Yeah.
And the act of thinking about it constantly is technically work.
Yeah.
Right. But we're also doing things that we're passionate about. So it doesn't feel nearly as laborious as going to a soul crushing job where you may or may not understand how your contribution rolls up into the purpose of the organization.
Yeah. That's really good.
I actually went through this whole essential, non-essential exercise this past summer, because you had referenced in the opening the quest for life. Well, all, coming up on 2 years ago, in December of 21, one of my former students said, Ed, if you did a podcast, I'd listen every week. And what an amazing compliment. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. You want to hear me every week? I mean, can I encourage you to have some form of intellectual diversity here? Can you please, you know, expand your horizons? But I was complimented. It felt good. It should. Yeah. It was complimented.
Yeah.
And I did the Quest for Life podcast for a year and a half. And it was an amazing experience. It was a solo gig, a few interviews sprinkled in there, and it was absolute therapy. I got to explore topics and concepts that I was interested in and mm-hmm. talk about them and, you know, figure out how they apply to daily life, really just to help people level up their mindset. And it got to a place, though, Mike, where this past summer, I didn't have the bandwidth for it anymore. I wasn't earning a living from it.
Yeah.
It brought me joy at one point, but it over time became a bit of a check the box activity. And I knew at that moment, because I didn't have an emotional attachment to it anymore, that it was non-essential. And so I sunsetted that in favor of those things that I believe are more essential that can move the needle.
Don't you attribute that to just the meditation and the prayer that you've been talking about and being able to have that touch with your voice? A lot of people will ask me, well, like, what's your goal with the podcast, you know? And the honest to God truth is, for me, it started so organically. I mean, it was kind of one of those things we joked about in our men's small group. But, you know, what happened along the way, maybe along the lines of what you're talking about, is, wow, I mean, my confidence grew. It became something that I love. It hits me where I am. I get to learn. I get to talk with people. I get to learn from people. I get to be curious. And it's, you know, rather than soul crushing, it is soul giving. Now, what is the life of that? You know, I have no idea. You know, I just know God's got me right where he wants me right now. Will that change in the future? Potentially. But I know it's good right now. It fits my quest for life. In fact, we talked about a lot of things today. What is the quest for life? I love that idea. Good transition, right? What is the quest of life for life that you think, and I'm going to say men, because predominantly, I would guess, listen to this podcast. I know a lot of women do, so that's cool too. What do you think the quest for life for men out there, what are they missing in today's world?
I think what they're missing is integration.
Ooh.
To become authentic gets used a lot, and I like that word, but to be integrated, which is to be whole.
Mm.
And if you think about this intersection between psychological, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being, these aren't mutually exclusive things.
No.
And here's how we know that. You said earlier that you love donuts and cookies. Well,
who doesn't, right?
Right. Every bit of nutritional evidence that has ever been captured,
yep,
will say that refined sugars affect the brain. You have dopamine hits that rival illicit drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It changes the chemical composition of neurotransmitters, so it affects how we think. So all of a sudden, your decision to consume donuts and cookies over a period of time or in excess modifies brain chemistry, which modifies your psychology, which modifies your emotions. And I like to differentiate between emotions and feelings, because if you look at neurobiology, emotions are the neurochemical cocktail that gets released. Feelings are the physical sensations that we experience by virtue of that neurochemical cocktail. So another way of saying that is that we always emote first. And if what I said out loud just a second ago didn't trigger in you a physical sensation, the intensity of that neurochemical cocktail just wasn't that significant. Versus you're on a hike and you come across a big cat, you're going to have a incredibly intense neurochemical experience because you're going to feel instant fear physically. That's the feeling. And so you have this interplay of the decisions that we make that can affect the physical, which correspondingly affect psychological and emotional. And then if we don't integrate God into our lives in some manner, whether it's a men's group or going to church, or as we've discussed throughout the show today, you know, getting quiet and going inward, then we find ourselves out of balance and we're not an integrated whole. Now, make no mistake, we're going to come across periods in our life of imbalance.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the idea of work-life balance, it's great in concept, but sometimes we have to step up at work and work more. And when we do that, we sacrifice certain aspects of our personal life. Sometimes we have to attend to family obligations that compromise our work life, may compromise getting a promotion. And so I don't think the goal is perfect balance. I think the goal is being fractionally better in each of those areas every day, knowing that perfection is unattainable. That should never be the goal. The goal should be a little bit better every day. So you've spoken about the benefit of this with your detox program, this cascading event to say, you know what, my gosh, I have more energy. I'm sleeping better. I don't have these cravings that are actually keeping me from attaining whatever I goal whenever I succumb to the cravings. And it really does feed on itself. And so to land the plane on this, it's really understanding the intersection of psychological, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being, and carving out time each and every day to focus on each of those things.
Yeah, it's so good because it's such a great way to end here today, because they all play ball together, and we need to make that recognition in our life that they all work together congruently if we want to have that life that we want to have. Ed, tell everybody, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you? And of course, we'll put this in the show notes, but how can everybody get in touch with you?
So Quest Consulting is questconsultingservice.com. So that's service singular. The questforlife.com, that's also the number four. So the quest number four life.com. You had referenced in the opening, the It's Not My Credit to Take podcast. There's a website under the same name. It's not my credit to take.com. And then listeners can always find me on LinkedIn. It's Dr. Ed Slover. And I don't think my picture shows up until we're actually connected. So I would encourage people who want to connect to do that. And then we can take it from there.
Yeah, sounds good. Ed, this was a fun conversation. We covered a lot of territory, but I had a blast talking with you. So thanks for being on the podcast today.
Me too. You're welcome. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. Now, I don't know about you, or at least I hope it's true for you, that gaining an edge by exploring how we can be more successful really gets me excited. And I hope the conversation I had with Ed sparked some inspiration in you and offered valuable insights and provided you with the tools that you need to navigate your own path to success. Now, the quest for success is a vast and intricate journey. It can be a challenge. It really and truly can. And it resonates differently, that journey, with each individual. It's a pursuit that intertwines ambition, determination, resilience, and personal growth, all combined. You know, success isn't about reaching an endpoint, but encompassing the evolving process and the lessons learned along the way. At least that's how it's worked out for me. I know that everything that I have been learning in my life is really culminating to the point today where I can be an asset to people. I can be of help to people. I can help impact people's lives. And that's why I've gotten into coaching. But what are some of the perspectives and dimensions that we're talking about here that get into the essence and the quest for success? Well, success can be elusive, yet an alluring pinnacle for us all to strive for. Now, its definition transcends that mere attainment of wealth or fame. It embodies a multifaceted journey encompassing personal growth, perseverance, and fulfillment. So let's talk a little bit more about some insight and exploration that we have for that quest for success. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, success is not a one-size-fits-all concept, but rather, it's a deeply personal pursuit, don't you think? Shaped by unique aspirations, values, and circumstances. Now, for some, it might manifest as professional achievement, for example, career milestones, financial stability, or maybe an entrepreneurial feat. It's what it is for me, one of the reasons. For others, success might revolve around personal growth, relationships, health, or making a positive impact on society. And contrary to popular belief, you know, success is, it's not a linear path free of obstacles. No way, man. I think you probably know that by now. It's a journey riddled with challenges, failures, and setbacks. And embracing failure as a stepping stone and learning from adversities is a hallmark of successful individuals. It's about that comeback, the second chances in life. And we all get those from time to time. So resilience is a big part of that. And it's the ability to bounce back stronger. It's a fundamental trait that fuels the pursuit of success. Now, in addition to that, passion and purpose are the driving forces that propel individuals toward their goals. When passion meets purpose, it ignites an unwavering dedication, pushing one beyond boundaries and fostering innovation and creativity. Identifying these driving forces is pivotal, easy for me to say, to navigating the path toward meaningful accomplishments. Don't you agree? And by the way, it's also important to point out that success isn't merely about setting goals. It's about the discipline and consistency in pursuing them. Small bite-sized chunks every day. I said this before, right here on my computer monitor, I've got 1% every day. That reminds me to take small bite-sized chunks, not eat the elephant in one bite. So it's about establishing routines and cultivating good habits and maintaining focus. Well, all those are crucial elements in achieving long-term objectives. It's those small, consistent efforts compounded over time that yield remarkable results. Believe me on that one. Now, in today's dynamic world, the definition of success has evolved. Of course, the digital age has opened up new avenues, redefining traditional notions of achievement. Now, success is now intertwined with adaptability to technology prowess and the ability to navigate a rapidly changing landscape. There's no escaping it. Technology is a part of our lives. In addition to that, amidst this pursuit of success that we all are on, the importance of well-being should not be overlooked. True success encompasses holistic well-being, physical, mental, and emotional health. Striking a balance between ambition and self-care is essential for sustainable and fulfilling success. I will tell you, prior to me recording this, I was in the gym working out. Why? Because getting in shape, being in shape, doing something physical is not only good for my physical well-being, it's good for my mental well-being. And honestly, I've come to enjoy it. Now, contrary to popular belief, success, well, it isn't the final destination, believe it or not. It's an ongoing journey marked by growth, evolution, and self-discovery. As individuals evolve, so do their definitions and perceptions of success. Now, celebrating milestones, please do that along the way, while staying adaptable to new aspirations is a key to this perpetual journey. It's a journey you're on, but celebrate those little successes along the way. Now, the quest for success, well, it's a profound expedition that encompasses various facets, each contributing to a nuanced and individual experience. It's about embracing the journey, learning from failures, staying true to passions, and finding fulfillment in personal growth. Ultimately, success isn't solely about reaching a predefined endpoint, but that transformative journey that shapes individuals along the way. Now, if you're looking to achieve more success and not sure where to begin, reach out to me at mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. I'm happy to set up a free initial call and talk about your quest for success. Now, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave me a great review on your favorite podcast channel. Always love to get those. And until next week, go out and make this your very best day ever. Take care, everybody. Improve your life today with Mike Van Pelt and True Man Life Coaching. Let's develop a roadmap of discovery that leads to success and satisfaction in your life. For additional information and details on how to schedule an initial coaching call, go to TrueManLifeCoaching.com.